Welcome to Bring It Up with Deb and Cindy. This is a program where we bring up the conversation. Your hosts, Deborah Flora, speaker, writer, and movie producer, and Cindy Fay, author, Bible teacher, and international correspondent. And now, it's time to elevate the dialogue and bring it up.
Welcome to Bring It Up. I'm Deborah Flora.
And I'm Cindy Fay.
Well, Cindy, I think we all know that something happened last week in New York, and it's really just sending ripples throughout the country. And I got to take a deep breath because it's burdened the hearts of so many. And
yes.
So, you know what? We just have to bring it up. That's what we do here, and that's what we do as women. We talk through things. And, well, here's what happened. Just 1 week after hundreds of thousands of people marched for life in our nation's capital, and they've been doing it nonstop since 1973, New York Mayor Andrew Cuomo signed into law the most extreme, most radical pro-abortion policy in our nation's history. And actually, one of the most radical in the world. We are far more liberal right now than even Europe.
And we do need to bring this up, Deb. It's very alarming. A lot of women across political lines that I know are extremely agitated by this. And we need to talk about it because we need to be informed. But because also we need to deal with our thoughts, our feelings, our convictions about this, our beliefs. And so, yeah, based on the number of calls and emails that I'm receiving, and I know you are too, by women who are so burdened by this, we really need to talk about it. It has become actually barbaric. So
yes.
It's time to get real.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, before we get into the really challenging details, we want to frame this topic with hope because we just have to remember we always have hope. We always can know that God's working. And, you know, here's where I already see some hope. The incredible reaction across this country against this horrific bill, it's ignited passions and conversations, like you said, across political lines, across ideologies, across even religious beliefs. And it may be the turnkey to stopping this trend towards death and turning people to life. It's actually an opportunity. We can all be a part of turning this around, but we have to start by being informed. So we want to do that. With that said, here are the basic details of the bill. New York's new law makes abortion legal until the very moment of birth. This means that a healthy 9-month-old baby can be aborted on its delivery date. We just need to take that in a moment. Oftentimes it's hard to look at these things because it's just terrible, but we need to know this. On top of that, the person performing this brutal and often and actually dangerous procedure no longer, according to this law, needs any medical license or medical degree.
That's just shocking.
It is. It is. And that's why it's so outrageous. I mean, let's all, by the way, stop. When we hear the name of these bills, let's realize that they're frequently misnamed. This new law is called the Reproductive Health Act, trying to sound very, very compassionate. But there's no protection at all for health, for the health of the mother, and of course not for the full-term baby whose life could be ended just moments before its first breath.
And by the way, I spent last evening with a woman who is the client services manager at a large crisis pregnancy center, and she said, Cindy, I won't even bring up to you how it is that they kill the child.
No. And if you want to know, you can find it online, but we just need to know what this is.
Yes. Well, the thing that is the most egregious is not only did they pass this law, but the way that Governor Cuomo trumpeted it so joyfully and the crowd applauded it enthusiastically. It's like a alternate universe or something. Then he had the Freedom Tower lit up in pink in quote unquote celebration. I can hardly say the word celebration.
Yes.
It's because it's so gruesome what they're celebrating. This is the same tower, by the way, that replaced the Twin Towers that was taken down at 9/11. And the mantra of these pro-abortion activists, you know, it used to be safe, legal, rare. At least they acknowledge back then that abortion is troubling no matter where you stand. But today, these activists have gone so far that they're making the passing of this law seem like a festival and endangering the lives of women who are going to have this done without benefit of medically trained personnel. You want to talk about risk, the health of the mother being at risk? That's the greatest risk of all to date.
It is, absolutely. And as you said, here's the good news. As we digest this, as we feel burdened, by the way, it's okay to feel burdened. It's okay to be upset because God can then replace that with his peace, but galvanize us to do something. And we can do something. We can make our voice heard, and then we can add them to the surge of just outcry that's rising up in our country right now. This is the time to turn this conversation around. There are so many standing up right now saying, this is not who we are as a country. This is not who we want to be as a people. Across the spectrum of religious, political views, we're called to speak the truth in love. We are. But we often don't speak up because we just simply don't feel equipped. That's why we want to take a little time together as women to dispel some myths so we can have this very important and timely conversation with our sisters, our daughters, our coworkers, our neighbors, and our friends. We can do it.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to dispel some myths. Here's the first one. Myth number one. This is the myth. The New York law only allows for late-term abortion when the health of the mother is at risk. Here's the truth. We've got to look at the word health. In 1973, the same day that Roe v. Wade legalized abortion, the Supreme Court released another sister decision of Doe versus Bolton that defined the health. Get this. The health of the mother is defined as not just medical or physical health, but also emotional, mental, economic, and social health.
Mm-hmm.
What it means is if a woman is just down, she's blue that day, or she's stressed, or she doesn't feel like she has quite enough money, or the baby would cause problems with her husband or her boyfriend or her family. Under this terrible ruling, these all justify an abortion for a woman's health. So when you hear that phrase, you have to know what it means. Therefore, when the New York law or any abortion law uses the phrase in cases of risk to the mother's health, the definition for health can be any reason under the sun left up to the discretion of the abortionist, who, by the way, profits financially from that decision, not unbiased.
Right, exactly. Okay, so there's myth number one about the health of the mother, which the phrase health is really questionable. Number two myth, women will die without abortion. Well, let's look at the truth. Most health issues occur after 26 weeks of pregnancy, and babies are now able to survive outside the womb after 21 weeks. So many doctors point out the taking of the life of the preborn child is never necessary to save the life of the mother. That's huge. The safest and simplest response for a mother whose health is in jeopardy is to deliver the baby. And it's also, by the way, the moral and compassionate response. The primary health issue before 21 weeks, let's look at the facts. The primary health issue at that point is an ectopic pregnancy, but abortion is never required for that condition because the surgical process is removing the tissue after a pregnancy terminates naturally, not ending the life of the living baby. So no abortionist does any of these life-saving procedures. Let's be clear. Only doctors who are equipped to save the mother and the baby.
Yeah, that's
so there's
so
a
huge.
Lot of, I hate to say it, this word, but Deb, you know, there's a lot of lying.
Yes, there is.
At the abortion clinic, you know, there just is.
Yeah, and by the way, that brings up a great point. God is not to be mocked. After Roe v. Wade, what was created and discovered at the same exact time? Ultrasounds.
Mm-hmm.
And even the Dr. Bernard Nathanson, who argued for Roe v. Wade, afterwards, he saw ultrasound. He changed his mind,
yes.
Not religiously, not politically, but simply based on truth and fact.
Mm-hmm.
So we're sharing the facts so we feel equipped. You're listening to Bring It Up with Deb and Cindy, and that's what we're doing. We're talking about this surge, this outrage, this uprising against barbaric practices that are no longer pro-choice or pro-life. It's just right or wrong. And we can be equipped with the truth to make our voices heard. So we're dispelling the myths. So myth number three, the majority of Americans are pro-choice. Okay, so this sometimes makes us feel like we shouldn't speak up because we feel like we're in the minority. The truth is far different than that. The truth is the vast majority of our country wants strict limitations on abortion, regardless of ideology. Get this. Over 90% of Republicans want to eliminate abortion after the first trimester. And by the way, that's the rule across most of Europe, which we think is more liberal than us. You know, that's not surprising, but here's what's surprising. 61% of those who call themselves pro-choice, 60% of Democrats are also against it after 3 months. Only 25% of Americans, 1 out of 4, wants abortion to go past the first trimester. So that's important to know. Also, only half of all Americans across all party lines, half of them believe abortion should only be allowed in the case of rape, incest, or to save the life of the mother. We've already talked about how a mother's life is not ever really saved by abortion. So that eliminates that as well. What many of these folks do not know, and we've got to be responsible for this no matter how we voted, we need to know that this outrageous New York ruling is what the Democratic platform reflects. It is for this extreme position of abortion on demand at any stage of pregnancy. Now, we don't share this to be political, but ladies, as Christ followers, we need to clearly know the platform of those we elect, hold it up to Scripture, which declares the sanctity of every human life. There are certain non-negotiables, and this is one of them. We got to be informed so we can have this conversation.
Yes. And, you know, the truth is we have to be biblically informed, Deb.
Yes.
We have to take, I don't care what political party you're part of, you should be taking your Bible with you into the voting booth.
Yes.
And the things that matter to God and the things that He calls sacred should be the things that we hold dear. And we should be voting according to our morality and our consciences and the word of the living God, regardless of party.
Mm-hmm.
So myth number four is there's nothing we can do. Well, the truth is we're already making a difference, and so much of the difference is happening one person, one heart at a time. Our studies are showing this. Abortion is down to its lowest level since Roe v. Wade by choice, and millennials are the most pro-life generation since 1973.
Such
why?
Good news.
Yes, let's look at why. I have to credit, honestly, the glorious work of pregnancy resource centers around the country who are providing women with life-giving options. I credit the millions of volunteers like my friend Joyce who love women enough to share with them the hope, the resources, who care enough to spare them the pain that post-abortive women face, many of them for a lifetime. That's also the untold story that women after post-abortive, they are racked with pain for years. At the end of the day, the battle's being won in the hearts of pregnant women who are loved enough to be given this kind of help, hope, and these kind of alternatives. The truth is, I think, we can't expect our laws are always going to support our convictions. And, you know, Deb, as I was praying about this a few days ago and talking about it with some trusted friends, the Lord dropped 2 Corinthians 3:6 into my heart, which says this: the law kills, but the Spirit gives life.
That's so good.
In this case, it's literally true. The law kills, but the Spirit of God is sweeping across this land, bringing life and hope and truth to women that the baby that they are carrying is fully human. It's fully alive. God knows its name, and it's fully deserving to live as God intended him or her to live. The law kills, but the Spirit gives life.
So good. And by the way, if you are post-abortive, the Spirit gives life and healing to you as well. There's no condemnation here. You can find life and healing in God's grace and truth and forgiveness. Well, here's the bottom line. When we look at the shocking headlines around us, we can take courage. We can be encouraged in the knowledge that we can and are making a difference. When we engage, as Cindy said, we are turning the tide one-on-one as more and more women are choosing life for themselves and their babies. We can talk about the noble choice of birth mothers, the noble choice they make when they give their child to another family longing to love a baby if they are not able to. When we use our voices, we can also turn the tide towards just laws in our nation. And right on the heels of New York, by the way, Virginia legislators tried to pass the same act, but it was defeated. Why? Because of the public outcry.
Mm.
Make our voices known.
Mm-hmm.
We have to educate ourselves. And if our state is trying to pass similar laws, then let's join together with others and take a stand. We
yes.
can do it.
Mm-hmm.
We can use our precious vote to elect just leaders who truly represent the majority of Americans, who stand for life and real compassion for women in need. Most of all, we can be encouraged. We were born for this time. We were equipped for this time and for this fight. We are not here today by mistake. God has equipped us to speak truth and life. And in fact, we have the very message and the words that the world is longing to hear. The law kills, but the Spirit gives life. Let's share that
mm-hmm.
and let's not be silent.
Yeah, it's so good. It's so good. On our website at bringitupmedia.com, we will have a link to Live Action, which is a great organization that is taking the lead on educating and equipping caring and concerned citizens to take a strong and a compassionate stand. All that information about Live Action will be at our website at bringitupmedia.com.
Well, up next, have you ever asked the question, God, what do I do now? Well, his answer might be surprising. Up next, we'll talk about it.
Welcome back to Bring It Up. I'm Cindy Fay.
And I'm Deborah Flora.
Well, Deb, you know, I love the segment we just did about the new abortion laws that was passed in New York, because so many people are incredibly concerned and outraged, frankly, and want to know what they can do. And so I want to say, if you missed any part of that, you can hear it on our website at Bring It Up Media, or you can podcast our show on iTunes by searching for Bring It Up Media. The bottom line is, we all want and must be people who make a difference, who want to act, who stand up when there's civic and moral issues mm-hmm. in our country, in our culture, that require our stand.
Yes.
For us to stand and speak. And sometimes, like in our previous section, the action is a no-brainer. The action that we need to take is obvious.
Yes.
So I just want to draw that line of distinction. Other times, however, in relationships with others, it may not be. And so I want to pose a different kind of question. Have you ever been at a place in your life, in the middle of a personal challenge or a relationship problem or an issue where there's a choice, do I speak up, do I don't speak up, where you've said, okay, God, what do I do now? How do I handle this situation?
Well, Cindy, you know I am not one to not run into a fray.
Right.
But too often I have done that in personal situations
yes.
with the same passion. Like you said, we're called to do that when there's an injustice
yes.
or something in our schools or something that it's just morally clear.
As citizens, of course.
As citizens. But I am not a citizen of my brother or sister's life. That's what I have to remind myself. You know, sometimes it's so easy when we see something and we know something's better for someone to just react. And that's a knee-jerk reaction. Sometimes we have to pause
yes.
before we act
yes.
and ask some questions.
Yeah, so we want to make that distinction, you know?
Yes.
Yeah, so I'm suggesting today that sometimes when we pray and ask God, what do I do now in a relationship scenario, the answer just might be nothing.
Oh, so hard.
Isn't it? You know, we might just need to change our perspective. So I'm going to throw out a few examples of some things that I'm facing right now or some of my friends are facing.
Mm.
These are real scenarios. A woman I care about has begun drinking too much, and I suspect it's every night. Here's another one. A friend's daughter and son-in-law refuse to allow her to watch their new baby because they reject her Christianity. One couple is headed for divorce unless something happens. Here's the fourth one. A newly divorced friend is floundering as her ex-husband attempts to take everything from her, including the kids.
Wow.
Now, here's the deal. When my friends share these very real situations with me, I'm hardwired to act. Just like I feel compelled to act as a citizen, in these relationship matters, I'm hardwired to act. I want to do something. And, you know, yes, I can listen and pray, but it doesn't feel loving to me unless I strategize an action plan to help fix this stuff.
Fix.
Am
yes.
I alone in that? I want to fix these relationship issues.
Yes, yes. I admit I am a recovering fixer of other people. You know, she said there are times that God does want us to act, especially when we see outrageous yes. things being put upon us or our children by politicians or the culture. Mm-hmm. We're called to stand for righteousness, life, truth, compassionate solutions. But when it comes to the lives of individuals around us, the call might not be to act, but instead to pray. Mm. We have to be really careful because mm-hmm. my desire to act in the public arena sometimes turns me into an enabler or a codependent in the personal arena.
Yes, yes.
And there's a difference. You know, if we're trying to make people less miserable, we may just make them okay enough that they don't have to deal with the real issue at hand.
Yeah.
When we immediately act or react in people's lives without praying first, we may be working actually counter to what God is doing.
Yep, exactly. Well, this week, I was reading this great devotional by a man named Cecil Murphy. By the way, don't you love the name Cecil?
Cecil. He just sounds like he should know deep and profound things.
I know. Well, Cecil does know deep and profound things. He wrote this devotional called The All-Seeing One. And it points to a really key truth here. Father God is the all-seeing one, not me. Mm. And sometimes when we pray about these matters that I'm talking about, these personal kinds of things and relationship things, he simply asks us to wait on him. We can get some great wisdom about this, by the way, by looking at the life of Jesus, who is our role model and who we are called to imitate. Even Jesus, who is God in the flesh, didn't run into action every time there was a problem. For example, when Jesus heard that his good buddy Lazarus was, quote, sick unto death, unquote, Jesus did not go rushing off to Bethany to fix it. John 11 tells us that Jesus waited until it was God's time. Mm. Now, can you imagine, you know, Jesus was fully human. Imagine the pressure that Jesus' friends put on him and how Jesus must have felt as a human. I mean, he was God and man. I can just hear them saying, Jesus, you know, hey, come on, you're the only one who can make Lazarus. Well, let's go. He's at the brink of death. Like, I can just hear them all saying to Jesus, do something. But Jesus didn't. Not yet. And we know from reading the whole story that his father, the all-seeing one, God, was up to something much greater.
Oh, gosh, isn't that the key? Sometimes, you know, I mean, I find myself wanting to go in and fix things, and I find myself praying the serenity prayer. God, grant me the courage to change the things I can, the serenity to accept the things I cannot, and the wisdom to know the difference. Mm-hmm. I add to that in what you're saying, something a friend said to me once. The questions are, is this for me? Is this now? Sometimes those answers are no, and,
yes.
and we have to have the wisdom to know that. And once again, we're talking about people's personal lives, not the things that are out there in our culture, but people's personal lives.
Yes.
Sometimes it's not the right time, or it's not for us.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And it's hard to know that.
We can, yes, exactly. But God, the all-seeing one, knows it.
Yes, he does.
Well, you're listening to Bring It Up with Deb and Cindy, and we're unpacking sometimes the prayer we might be praying. Okay, God, what do I do now? We're finding some surprising answers in that prayer. And it's not easy, Deb, because I want to just talk about my own life. Right now, I want to spring into action to save my 96-year-old daddy from grieving. You know, I want to do whatever it takes to make him happy again. My mom passed away. I've talked about that already. Dad's grieving. You know, I want to take a million little actions that are going to make him smile. So as I've processed this with some trusted friends, I realized that instead of jumping into action, I need to see my dad's grief from God's perspective. I need to ask God, show me what you're doing. Show me, Father, what you are doing. And when I pray this way and when I wait, I'm realizing that I'm not the fixer. You know, God is not sitting around, Deb, waiting for me to jump into action in my dad's behalf. He, God, the all-seeing one, is acting. And all that is required of me right now is to be still and to be open to hear God's marching orders or his order to be still and know that I am God. Mm. And truthfully, what I'm seeing right now is that God is healing my dad's heart day by day. God is showing my dad how to grieve. God is meeting him every morning as my dad sits with his Bible and his cup of English breakfast tea. God is wiping the tears from my dad's eyes. I don't need to be hopping around trying to fix his grief. I don't have to do anything but listen and wait and be ready in case he calls me.
it's so important. We live in a culture that is so grief aversion. I mean, is it anything negative we want to avoid and keep mm-hmm. others from experiencing? Mm-hmm. And what you're showing is God's working in that. Instead of always jumping in, and it's hard, especially when we see people in our own family or in the lives of our loved ones, it's hard not to immediately act. But instead of saying, what should I do? You ask the question, God, what are you doing? What are you doing? He may want us to do something, but we need to hear from him first. He may be doing something that only he can do, like heal your dad. Like the Lazarus example, God was up to something far greater than Jesus running to heal Lazarus's high temperature.
Yes.
He was doing something that would change the world and everyone after. Instead, the all-seeing one was planning to raise the dead. Yes. If we interfere in some things, we may just rob everyone of an amazing thing that God is doing.
Yes. Well, as that devotional that I read stated this, quote, praying to the all-seeing God can be extremely liberating.
Yay.
You know what? It's such a huge relief, Deb, when we realize that we're not the Savior. You know,
oh,
we don't
goodness.
Have to come rushing in with answers and strategies. We don't have to be the therapist, the fixer, the counselor. God doesn't need us to put out every fire, to rescue every loved one, to hold back the waters of grief or trouble. That's his job. The all-seeing one is so trustworthy. He's the one that says, his word tells us, he draws near to the brokenhearted. He's the one who sets the captives free. He bottles our tears, and he's going to make a way for us through the wilderness. I just have to say, who among us can come close to those kind of promises?
Not me. Yep. I admit that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh, it's so true. You know, and it's such a key. Just like you, Cindy, I mean, in our family right now, we have two kids that are now teenagers. And man, if that isn't fraught with all kinds of emotional challenges and different kinds of challenges, and I'm having to ask God every day, am I doing something? Should I step in? Or what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
I experience this daily.
Mm-hmm.
I ask him, when am I supposed to step in? And when is the right thing just to step back?
Yes.
And let God teach them through the consequences of their actions, or teach them that they're resilient and they can get through
yep.
something.
Mm-hmm.
There are times for both, times to step in and times to step back. And only through prayer can we hear what our role is in different circumstances.
Yep, exactly. I've experienced the same thing, Deb. Just recently, a friend of mine with a significant disability was planning to attend this event that she believed would be hugely beneficial to her career. So I had actually in my hot little hands a copy of the conference agenda and the speaker schedule, and I knew that this conference was focused very differently than what she was hoping, and I knew it was way below her level of expertise and probably wouldn't benefit her much, and plus there's the physical stress of her even getting there. So here I come rushing in, you know, Lord, give me the opportunity to speak to her, help her steward her precious time and her resources and her limited physical abilities. You know, my intentions, of course, were good, maybe even noble.
But I think they were.
Yes, but what happened is that the more I prayed about it, the clearer it became. The Lord just said, say nothing. Do nothing. It's not your deal. Just pray for her, and that's all. And the truth is, you know what? I'm not the center of the universe. I'm not the all-seeing one, Deb, which is mm-hmm. a huge relief. And I realize God might be up to something huge with my friend at this conference that has nothing to do with her career. Maybe there's a divine appointment there for her. The truth, I learned a huge lesson. That was just a couple weeks ago. The truth is, we don't have to respond to everything that affects the loved ones we care about. Sometimes God just asks us to see the circumstances and to pray to the all-seeing one that his will be done.
Oh, that's so good. Well, if you find yourself burdened with something a loved one is going through, you're praying for clarity, whether to step in or step back, let us know so we can pray for you. We would love to lift you up. Write to us on our website at bringitupmedia.com or on our Facebook page, Bring It Up Media. We are here to do life together.
Yep. Well, as we continue, based on how you talk about your marriage, would I think it's a horror movie or a beloved timeless classic?
Oh, no.
It's all about the lens through which the movie is seen. Well, up next, and just in time for Valentine's Day, a fresh lens for all our important relationships.
This is
Cindy with an invitation for you to join us as a partner in the Bring It Up radio show. We're a nonprofit, so your donation is tax deductible. Now, this is the program where we're not afraid to bring up the hot topics of the day. Whatever the issue, we're ready to take it on from a biblical perspective to help you think and act biblically as a champion for your family, your community, your country, and the world. And you make it all possible with your prayer and financial support. You can donate by logging onto our website, bringitupmedia.com, and clicking the donate button. Give any amount, put it on your credit card, and maybe make it a monthly support. And again, because we're nonprofit, your gift is tax deductible. So come join us in strengthening biblical values in our homes and in our crazy culture by partnering with us. Just log on to bringitupmedia.com and click on the donate button. And thanks. We're in this together. Again, that's bringitupmedia.com. Welcome back to Bring It Up. Today, I'm Cindy Fay.
And I'm Deborah Flora.
Hey, Deb, have you seen the new Mary Poppins movie yet?
Oh, I haven't had time. And part of me is afraid to because the old one just has such a tender spot in my heart.
Yes.
With the supercalifragilisticexpialidocious and the dancing penguins. You know, I mean, I don't know. It's probably great. Nothing can top that, though.
No. You know, I haven't yet either, but I really want to because as a kid, it was one of my favorites. But just this past week, I came across this great article by a woman named Karen Amon that freaked me out, actually. She wrote that there is a new online video that changes the tone of this classic, sweet movie, Mary Poppins. And instead of charming and whimsical, this version is called Scary Mary.
Oh, no. Don't do it.
Yeah, it splices these scenes together with some horrid, ghastly, ominous music and turns the whole thing into like a horror movie.
Oh, my.
Mary Poppins in this online video is shown weirdly peering out windows like a stalker. And one of the scenes looks like the kids are running for their lives. And the creepiest part was when Mary sings what used to be this really tender lullaby. Stay awake. Don't rest your head. Instead, it sounds like this ominous warning, like she's going to murder them in their beds
Cannot watch it. They're going to ruin it.
I know. Well, in short, with just a little tweaking on the part of the videographers who did this, by choosing dark parts of the movie that could have been made to feel creepy, Scary Mary actually makes us believe that Mary Poppins is a horror flick.
You know, I've seen this so much, as you know, my husband is a producer at one of the big studios, and he's done a lot of trailers in the past, and his job has sometimes been to make a war movie look romantic or a comedy look, you know, heroic, and he actually achieves it. It's all about rearranging the footage, setting it to a different background. It entirely changes the impression and the perspective that the viewer has of what the film is really about.
Yep. Well, the article I read by Karen Amon took this analogy of Scary Mary and applied it to our marriages. And
oh, my.
Pretty creative, I thought. And I have to admit, the analogy is spot on. So let me ask us all a question. When was the last time we complained about our husband to someone? About a habit of his, what he did or didn't do? Don't raise your hand.
But I'm not going to tell you.
Yeah,
right now.
I know. Now let's ask ourselves this. When was the last time we complimented our husband to a friend or we shared a story where he shines?
Oh, you know what? Great question. Ladies, this is where we get honest.
Yep.
We all know that this is unfortunately what happens far too often when we get together. It's easy. It's the default mode to, you know, rag on our husband.
Yep.
Here's a question. Do we join in? Do we stop it? Do we turn around when we hear a joke made about men in general, for instance, or about marriage? Do we just go with the flow and laugh along? You know, it's especially important in today's culture when men are maligned. Mm-hmm. I mean, they are so put down. Everything masculine is considered to be bad. Do we repeat it? Do we blindly accept it? What we say, what we hear coming from our own mouths, and what we agree with, it changes our view of our own husband and the very idea of marriage.
You bet. And it's like we're editing, just like the makers of Scary Mary did. We're selectively choosing events or situations, things our husband said or didn't say or did or didn't do, and then we make this video in our head that portrays our husband or our marriage in a pretty dim and scary light. light.
Yes. You know, I mean, if we've been married more than one day, then every single marriage has both. It has good times. It has bad times.
Yes.
What we choose to focus on, what we choose to edit and portray in our marriage to others, we can handpick what those are.
Yes.
We all have hard situations, conflict, baggage, unmet expectations. We may have real disappointments, dreams not coming true the way we'd hoped. That's reality.
Yes, it is.
But the reality is also full of beautiful moments, kind gestures, laughter, burdens shared. The question is, what do we choose to focus on? What clips do we pull out? If we intentionally choose to focus on the ugly stuff, pretty soon we believe our marriage is a horror flick.
That's the truth.
Yes.
And when we do that, by the way, we're magnifying one side of our marriage and silencing the other part. We're allowing our emotions and our minds to play tricks on us, fooling us into thinking that our whole marriage is just plain horrendous. Well, we can always go to the Bible for a balance. Philippians 4:8. Tells us this. Finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, honorable, just, pure, lovely, commendable, if there's any moral excellence or anything praiseworthy, dwell on these things. That means consider and esteem them, and the God of peace will be with you. All right, that's God's word. We have a choice here.
Yes, we do.
About what to focus on in our marriage, our husband's faults and shortcomings, the hard stuff, or we can look deeply and consider for what is good, what we can praise. And by the way, this practice is beneficial in every area of life. But this week, as we're heading into Valentine's Day, it applies really beautifully to our marriage relationship.
Oh, it's, you know, especially when we get into the everyday challenges, we can just get our nose buried in budgets, bills, home repairs, parenting. We have to intentionally pause and remind ourselves why we married this wonderful man.
Yes.
Really, you know, it's by design that we're different. I mean, for me, Cindy, we're entering, as I said, the teen years with our kids. It's bringing up new challenges. We don't always see exactly the same when certain discipline issues come up. Let's say
it isn't so.
It's so true. But that when I change my mind and I don't think, oh, well, different is wrong. Instead, I realize that my husband provides a wonderful masculine dad view that helps balance my sometimes more maternal and sometimes too lenient inclinations.
Mm.
You know, I mean, that's what we need to do. Intentionally turn it around and focus on what is good and positive and right.
Yeah.
You know, Cindy, what about you? Have you ever had to edit your marriage movie, so to speak, to focus on what is praiseworthy?
Well, I'm going to just, I'll be really honest.
Please
this
do.
Makes me look a little, well, yeah, I'm okay with it. Yeah, my husband, quite frankly, my husband's an introvert. And I used to see this as a huge negative, Deb. You know, he is not the life of the party. It takes him a while to warm up in a room full of people. Me, I come from a Greek family. That's all I need to say. So, you know, we're just all talking all the time. So it was just plain weird when I realized what an introvert he was until I chose, the Lord really took some blinders off, and I saw how beautifully he connects with people one-on-one. My husband likes to go deep. He truly listens. He tries to truly hear people. He asks questions that lets people know he's interested in them. Instead of being the floor show, he's the merciful, kind, and other-focused person who really operates in a lot of humility. So, gulp. I had to do some repenting. So, here's a challenge this week, I think, for all of us. Instead of highlighting in our minds what's bad or wrong or irritating or different than what we'd hoped about our husband or our wife, let's start a new powerful habit of reframing that movie that runs in our heads. Let's refocus to see what's good and right about our loved one. And let's especially look to see what God is doing in our marriage and in our mate. And we can be people who look for and highlight what's good and honorable and praiseworthy.
Yes. Oh, Cindy, you know, I love the word magnify. It's in the Bible a lot. And it just means that we can make something bigger by examining it closely. If we look hard enough at our spouse, we can choose what to magnify.
Yes.
That irritating habit or that wonderful quality that is worthy of our admiration and respect. Whatever we magnify gets bigger. If we choose to list the admirable and respectable qualities and call those things out and call them out to him also. Mm-hmm. Let's not be miserly with our compliments because we hear ourselves saying them. You know, God's going to give us a completely fresh perspective in our marriage and in our mate.
Yep. And after all, we married this person, right?
Yes.
I think this as an exercise in remembering why we did that. And when the movie that runs in our head is filled with those kind of positive things that we love about our spouse, Deb, I think what happens is a recommitment to that person we fell in love with. Our love is rekindled and recharged. And by the way, I just want to add this too. This principle is true no matter what relationship we apply it to. We can choose to see our sister, our best friend, our coworker through a negative lens or a positive one.
Yes.
Whatever we magnify is going to get bigger. So we can choose what we are going to focus on, their faults or their strengths.
Oh, and I think that's the key. And we talk a lot about intentionality, and that really means choosing. It's our choice. That's the good news. We can choose. Every relationship, especially marriage, is very complicated. It's a mixture of things that are both awesome and not so awesome. You know,
maybe
so,
awful.
Yeah, exactly. So we get to choose what we'll dwell on. When we dwell on the challenging things, our marriage can seem like that horror movie where we want to scream, run, cover eyes, get out of it. But if we deliberately choose to focus on the awesome aspects of our relationship, the story will become a beloved classic that we enjoy year after year, and that we're delighted to realize we're one of the leading characters in this great movie.
Exactly. Well, Deb, let's get practical. You know, if we've been stuck in the horror movie mentality, constantly painting our marriage partner in a dark and negative light, how do we get unstuck? Well, Karen Amon suggested we can start by asking ourselves one simple question. What character quality in my spouse do I admire the most? Now, you know, some of us, if you're listening, you might have to think a while, but that's okay. You're exercising a new muscle. So make a list of a few qualities that maybe come to mind. Secondly, let your spouse know. A muscle gets stronger with use. So verbalize your new epiphany. Mm-hmm. You know, send him a text, call him, meet him at the door when he gets home, and tell him the quality that he possesses that you've been thinking about all day. And if you're single, the same applies to a dear friend, a family member, a coworker. The truth is, who doesn't appreciate being appreciated? You know, what relationship on earth wouldn't prosper under this kind of light? Romans 12:10 tells us this: be devoted to one another in love, not criticism. I put that part in. Honor one another above yourselves.
Oh, that's good. You know what, Cindy? I appreciate you. I just want you to know that.
I feel the same, Deb. I wouldn't want to be doing this with anybody else.
Yes, exactly. Well, if you could use some encouragement in your marriage, check out Karen Emmons' upcoming new book, Keep Showing Up, How to Stay Crazy in Love When Your Love Drives You Crazy.
That's a great title.
That's a great title. Well, we'll have a link to this great new book on our website, bringitupmedia.com, and on our Facebook page, Bring It Up Media. Once again, that's at bringitupmedia.com.
Well, up next, Deb and I are going to share some hilarious and tender Valentine's Day surprises that we've known or we would like to know. In other words, we're going to talk about what worked and what hasn't worked and why the best things in life really are free. Stay with us.
Hi, I'm Bill, and this is my wife, Kathleen, and we're the owners of American Vision Windows.
When Bill and I decided to have our windows replaced, we thought we had found a reputable company to do the job. We had such a negative experience that we decided to take action and start American Vision Windows.
We've set out to revolutionize the window business by building American Vision Windows on quality, integrity, and customer service. We put our name and reputation on the line to better serve homeowners like you.
Bill and I have learned a lot from our customers. We've found that the number one reason people decide to get new windows is beauty.
And American Vision Windows is making it easier for you to afford beautiful windows with 0% financing for one full year. Plus, they'll pay the tax. So call 888-228-0722, 888-228-0722, or AmericanVisionWindows.com.
Catch the vision, American Vision Windows.
CSOB number 778326 on approved credit. Certain restrictions apply. Tax based on materials. Expires 1/31/19.
Welcome back to Bring It Up. I'm Deborah Flora.
And I'm Cindy Faith.
Well, Cindy, we all know the song, Money Can't Buy Me Love.
No.
It cannot.
No, it can't.
Oh, you do know the song.
Yes.
You just agree that
yes,
it can't.
Yes, I'm agreeing
it.
With the song.
There we go. However, the flurry of spending at Valentine's Day seems to show a very different philosophy, let's be honest. For instance, last year, Valentine's Day retail sales across America were over, get this, $19 billion, with a B, billion dollars.
Yes. Dollars.
$4.8 billion on jewelry, $4.6 billion on dates, $2.1 billion on everything. On get this, $1.7 billion just on candy.
Whoa.
That's a lot of candy.
And then what happened? Well, that just flies in the face of all of our dieting resolutions in January, but that's a lot of billion.
It really is, you know.
It's a lot of billion on love.
It is. And money can't buy us that.
No.
So while flowers, chocolate, and jewelry are all pretty safe bets, some men like to think outside the box for gifts. And we want to give them some credit, but it doesn't always have great results. So just for the fun of it, you know, it's a thought that counts. But we wanted to share some of these that pretty much missed the mark. Okay, so here are some things that women shared that they regretfully received for Valentine's Day.
These are what not to get, men.
Yes, yes. Yes, go ahead. So one woman wrote this. In my 14 years of marriage, I say the worst present I ever received was a state-of-the-art barbecue grill because it was clearly for him to put out by the pool and not for me.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, one woman received Xbox or a new video game that just happened to be the one her husband didn't have.
Oh, no.
Bad.
Bad. Here's another thing. Cleaning items. Don't go there. This one woman got a vacuum cleaner. Anything in the house cleaning motif should be off limits.
Yes, and so can anything in the weight loss, because one woman received exercise mat and weights. Now, unless you're asking and begging for them, men, do not get your wife exercise equipment for Valentine's Day. It's the hidden message is just not
it's wrong.
Good.
Yes.
Yeah.
Here's another landmine to avoid. Do not give your significant other books on emotional healing. Like, you know, healing your emotional self. That is communicating something that may not be best on Valentine's Day.
Right. And you know what? Also, take a look at your family of origin. I'm going to out my husband, who bought me for our first Valentine's Day, I think it was like a crock pot, because that's what his dad used to do with his mother. Bad. Again, we don't get things because that's what dad got our mother.
That's such a good point. Well, you know, here's the thing. Most guys really want to do the right thing, except perhaps the guy with the Xbox. And we want to give the right thing. So it brings up a question. How do we let our guy know what we want, and what do we do with the present that really falls flat? So here are a couple of guidelines. Ladies, it's okay to talk about what we would like instead of expecting the men in our lives to be mind readers. It doesn't happen.
Exactly. If the gift isn't quite what you wanted, but it's and isn't too costly, then maybe just receive it graciously, and then remember to talk about what you might really like next Valentine's Day.
And that's why we're bringing it up now, so there's time.
Yeah.
And if it is expensive and you really don't like it, consider talking with your spouse about it gently, especially if your family's on a tight budget, but do it with a lot of gratitude.
Yep.
You know, and our heart goes out to men this time of year. It's a lot of pressure mounted by our culture that demands romance on cue. So we want to list a couple of low-cost yet priceless gifts that we can give or we might want to receive. So, you know, here I'll just say one. My husband one time made a CD mix of all our favorite songs. It was like a travel log, and I just loved it. That didn't cost anything but time.
One thing that I received once that's just priceless is a card made on Photoshop with pictures of our life together, special memories we've shared, and then a very beautiful love letter tucked in with all of that handmade card with those pictures. I still
love it. Old-fashioned love letters are definitely a hit. You know, hey, write a poem for your spouse and frame it. That's simple.
Yep. Or you can surprise your wife, farm the kids out, and cook her dinner.
Oh,
that's always
so great.
A big hit.
It is. Well, this Valentine's Day, you know, we love the scripture, Colossians 3:12. Therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness. Basically, let's be patient with our men. You know, we're so glad that you joined us today, and we pray that you have a week filled with the best things in life that are truly free, which are love and laughter, and the peace of knowing that whatever your Valentine's Day looks like, we're all loved by the one who made us and knows us inside and out.
Have a great week.